TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness.
Our challenge today is to discuss issues and concerns that family farmers have raised about genetic engineering. We're talking about biotechnology applied to farming. Issues and concerns that family farmers have about this new technology. They're questioning GMOs, and they're challenging corporate and political power that seems determined to put these GMOs on our plates, whether we want them there or not.
That was the voice of Ted Corday. He was the moderator of a session on family farms and genetic engineering held in San Diego in the summer of 2001. Ted Corday is program director of Farm Aid. The idea for Farm Aid started in 1985 at the Live Aid concert when Bob Dylan said on stage, "Wouldn't it be great if we did this for our own farmers right here in America?" Now, 17 years later, Farm Aid is not the only organization supporting family farmers. And many of the organizations, such as the National Family Farm Coalition, Farmer to Farmer Campaign, and Via Campesino, are involved in an international educational campaign on the dangers of genetic engineering. Every year, somewhere in this country, the biotechnology industry holds its annual trade conference. And each year, for the last 4 years, a counter-conference is held at the same location, called Beyond Biodevastation. It keeps a close watch on the unfolding drama of the impact of engineered crops, seeds, and engineered animals as they get released into nature and become part of our food. As a testimony to the power that corporations wield in this country, the U.S. allows growth hormones in meat and milk that are banned in the European Union and has a larger acreage of engineered crops under cultivation than any other country. As you will hear, American farmers are already losing export markets in important crops because even organic growers can no longer be sure to grow pure food due to pollen drift and contamination from neighboring land. That means that we, as consumers of food, now eat a disproportionately large amount of engineered products, or GMOs, that cannot be sold elsewhere. And these engineered substances are often unrecognizable. These products do not have to be labeled. Who would expect that a cookie or a soft drink contains GMOs? Over 50% of the U.S. soy crop is already genetically engineered, and soy shows up as an ingredient in many processed foods, from baked goods to meat. It is used as bulk, emulsifier, or egg substitute. It is used in microwave foods to preserve moisture and taste. Most worrisome, soy is also a major ingredient in baby food. And today you will hear from soy farmer Bill Christensen from Missouri. But first we will turn to another important food, milk. In 1993, a growth hormone, RBGH, or recombinant bovine growth hormone, was put on the market. Dairy farmers can inject their cows and force them to yield up to 25% more milk. Even though traces of the growth hormone show up in milk, the producers of the hormone claim that there are no health effects for us who drink the milk. Some farmers and scientists and investigative reporters say that that is not true. Growth hormones have been linked to various forms of cancer in humans and have undisputed and obvious serious health effects on the cows that get injected. It is hard for us to protect ourselves from hormones in milk since milk from different sources is mixed in large bulk tanks. Monsanto claims that 1/3 of the dairy cows in the U.S. are injected with RBGH. That means that every glass of milk, every piece of cheese or other dairy product in the U.S. may contain hormones unless it is labeled RBGH-free. The good news is that 10% of the milk in the U.S. now carries the RBGH-free label, and Consumer Action is expanding that percentage, and I hope you too, after hearing from dairy farmer John Kinsman, will help make our milk supply safer. So here is John Kinsman, a lifelong dairy farmer from Wisconsin and vice president of the National Family Farm Coalition. His first campaign against genetically modified products was against RBGH. What began out of concern for the health of his children and his animals has since become a task he has taken on in spite of his huge commitment to his ongoing dairy operation. He told me later that it is not always easy to find friends and neighbors to help run the dairy operation while he is away on speaking tours. Here is dairy farmer, father, and grandfather John Kinsman.
Over 15 years ago, some of us in Wisconsin read about this RBGH, I'll call it BGH, was being experimented and tested in the universities. And I had a son and maybe a daughter at the university system at that time, and they were being used as guinea pigs. And without anyone's knowledge, we had to go through Freedom of Information Act searches, FOIA searches, to find out what they were doing. And we read that this first GMO, the first to enter the food chain, was going to put 25% more of we family farmers out of business because they claimed it would produce that much extra milk and produce a surplus, lower our prices, and force us out. So to begin with that, we could not get any press or any information. It was just a subject we could not get in front of everyone. So in desperation, I made a sign, I took some handouts, and I went at the center of the university where the dairy products were being sold unsuspectingly to the students, staff, and faculty, and protested with the sign. And immediately, there was a lot of attention. And within a year, I was in Europe on a speaking tour where they told about the farmers marching on the university. I said, here I am. But anyway, it was a good way of getting attention. Now, there are four things that are very important to begin with the BGH. First of all, the cows burn out. There are tremendous problems. Dr. David Kronfeld from the University in Virginia, I believe in the East, took Monsanto and Cyanamid and Elanco and Upjohn's own literature and found they were not giving this stuff out in the correct manner. It was very harmful to the cow's health. It shortened their life. And it also requires huge amounts of antibiotics and other drugs. The other part that is frightening with this, by forcing these cows to milk beyond their capacity, beyond their metabolic capacity, is also destroying their inherent capacity to reproduce and maybe to produce. There is now a shortage of cows. It is so short that if we didn't import milk where we had a surplus when they first began to use this product, we would have a shortage of dairy products. So we're going to be dependent on other countries as we force them to accept lower prices. If you're familiar with the WTO, the whole thing is revolving. It's a race to the bottom in prices. Then the next thing is the human health problems, implications. We were told there were none. It's simple protein. It digests in the gut. You're just fine. We did not agree with that. We found many scientists, Dr. Sam Epstein, University of Illinois, Chicago, found that there were links to tumor growth. The IGF-1 that is elevated in this kind of dairy product from these cows is very likely to higher incidence of breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer. Dr. William von Meyer from near Madison, our home state, found that in his own research, looking at their research also, that it does also elevate the possibility of diabetes to a great degree. Thirdly, this forced, after year to years, thousands of farmers off the land because of lower prices, some consumer resistance, loss of markets, because the Europeans will not take any hormone-produced milk, and neither will many other countries. Because of these low prices and farmers forced into bankruptcy, for instance, in Wisconsin, we lose 3 to 4 a day. And this is a terrible tragedy. Suicide is the largest cause of unnatural death of farmers in the U.S. now, mainly due to low prices and farmers blaming themselves. The GMOs are one part of this whole equation, but they speed it all up, and they do force farmers into some terrible decisions. Now, the environmental damage is the fourth issue. When the heavy rains come, I get sometimes a foot of soil from my neighbor washing off his land into my pasture. And with it comes BT corn, Roundup Ready, all this, and a huge amount of this goes out right on down into the stream and into the Mississippi River and eventually into the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. It's polluting not only their land but the ocean. And so we're stealing from another generation, and we're producing a false surplus of something that's not really fit to eat. And if you wonder why I'm so thin, when I get away from home, I'm scared to eat because I keep reading these horror stories of what these people in these factories, farms, are using, the antibiotics, the drugs, the illegal drugs. And sadly, one of the really tough part is the loss of dignity. Food has been reduced to a commodity that is bought and sold on the exchange. And it has no dignity as food. It is a commodity to be bought and sold to the highest or lowest bidder. And you are the victim as consumers, and we are the victim as producers. So there is some hope. Now, I'm not all blue or wouldn't be here. You are the people who make the difference. You vote every time you spend a dollar. And some of these companies say that. Monsanto says it. The people are voting for us. They're buying our products. You are the solution. You people as consumers. We can change this. We can change government policies. We can change these policies because it's economics that drive it. And if you're not buying those things and you're buying from the right people, it'll change. Thanks for your attention.
That was John Kinsman, a lifelong dairy farmer from Wisconsin and vice president of the National Family Farm Coalition. He spoke at a conference session on family farms and genetic engineering. The helicopter that you heard flying over the Unitarian Church where this event was held was apparently there to protect the biotechnology trade conference of the biotech industry that was held 10 minutes away. Bill Christensen is a soybean and corn grower from Missouri and the president of the National Family Farm Coalition. Soy and corn are the most extensively engineered plants to date and also the most widely used, not just in their unprocessed state, but as food additives. You can check this by reading the ingredient labels on the food you buy. Here is the soy and corn farmer, Bill Christensen from Missouri.
I want to thank those that are responsible for setting up these meetings here in San Diego. It's very important. I also want to thank you all for being here. You know, I'm the farmer, or one of the farmers, out there producing the food that most of you probably consume every day, because soybeans is our primary product that we produce. And like Ted said, we raise some corn, we raise some wheat, and we also raise some cattle. So, we have a little bit of a relationship. You know, I'm the producer and you're the consumer. And that means that we have to work together here to make sure that our government does the right thing and that we get a little bit of control on some of these corporations that are causing everybody a great deal of problem, not only in the U.S., but around the world. And we need some dramatic change in the agriculture policy of this nation. We need people across this country to stand up and demand better rules and regulations to govern agriculture, because that governs food sovereignty and the food policy. And the U.S. is very much in the forefront around the world in dictating what other countries do because of the economic grips we have on those. Now, I want to just say a couple of words about the situation in agriculture now. And it's not very good. You know, I mean, we could tell some really bad stories for the rest of the day. But, you know, the farmers in the United States have just come through a farm crisis. It was primarily an economic crisis. And there's a great number of farmers that didn't make it through that economic crisis. And they are in San Diego and New York and wherever that they can go to find a job to feed and care for their families. So, you know, we need to keep family farmers farming. Because of this economic crisis, we've got a lot of broke farmers. The broke farmers are there because of concentration and globalization, it relates back to the whole scenario of what corporations can do through government. And, you know, they have had a lot of practice for a lot of years, and they are way ahead of us. And so we have to kind of work double time to catch up and be able to have a little influence in what is supposed to be a democracy. Sometimes I wonder about that. One of the real problems, you see, is the concentration, you know, in the meats, the seeds, just about everything that it has to deal with inputs and everything that you deal with, too, really. We have this great problem with GMOs. It's been going on longer than most people think. You know, it's been going on for 25 or 30 years, really. But the first real production of GMOs in this country was very recent, you know, the last 5 years or something like that. And there's a great deal of risk and liabilities around GMOs. And, you know, if there wasn't all of that unknown risk, there would be insurance companies that would step up to the plate and for the fees would insure these genetic engineering corporations. But I know of no insurance company in the world that will insure a genetic engineering corporation. And I think they show good judgment for not doing that. So where are all these GMOs? Primarily, they're in the United States. About 90% of the GMOs in the world are in the U.S. I think we need to learn a little bit of a lesson there. Either we have bad policy in this country, or we're just simply not as smart as the rest of the world. Because, you know, the people around the world have stood up and said no to GMOs and no to the corporations that are trying to put this thing over. So why does the U.S. farmers produce these GMOs? Well, you know, there are several reasons. One of those reasons is that farmers get a great deal of information out of journals and publications, and GMO corporations have the money and the wherewithal and the ability to do all of this slick advertising. And they do it very extensively. And farmers pay attention to this. They also pay attention to what the land-grant university systems tell them that are supposed to be in doing research and development for the public. But they, for some time now, have been, their public has included the genetic engineering corporations. And, you know, there's good reason for that. In our state of Missouri, you know, Senator Bond, our senior senator, was head of the appropriations in the U.S. Senate, and he was dragging home all of these big bucks to St. Louis for the Monsantos of the world. And now then, he gets a little help through the back door because Monsanto is his biggest campaign contributor. So, you know, we got to do something about how politics is played in this country. You know, it's this huge money that has really allowed GMOs to move ahead in the U.S. GMOs are condoned by the commodity organizations that we pay checkoff fees to. But They do not speak for family farmers. They speak for the corporate style farmer. And, you know, the Farm Bureau is right there playing up to the same way with supplying the power to pass the laws that facilitate the GMO companies there. We have all of this background information. But, you know, some of the main things that we have to work on here also are what really GMOs, what they accomplish and how they do it and what it's doing to society, to the food sovereignty of the world, and to each individual. It was a windfall idea for the GMO companies and the seed producers years ago to get established patent law, which simply says that if you have, in Monsanto's case with Roundup soybeans, if you have three genes out of 750,000 in this plant, you can claim it, which is a farce to begin with. There is patent laws that says that the owner of the patent has the right to that production and can dictate what can be done with that production. Well, you know, I've farmed for a long, long time, and I have never used any GMO seeds on any of my land ever, and I don't ever intend to. I'm a seed saver. Because I'm a seed saver, and, you know, I'm not by myself. 85% of the farmers around the world are seed savers. But, you know, whenever you have a patent, that eliminates the possibility of saving seed to plant the next year's crop. We got loss of seed diversity. You know, that narrows the gene pool. And it narrows future generations' opportunity if we lose part of that gene pool. We've got seed cost. You know, the way I produce seeds and the way I plant my soybeans, it's just a small fraction of the cost that it would be if I was planting GMO seeds. You know, something like $6 compared to $42 an acre for seed. Because of agriculture policy, we are producing below the cost of production, and that extra $35 is valuable to me, as it is to most farmers. Not only is it seed cost, but it's additional chemical cost that is involved here. If you were planting no-till GMO soybeans, for instance, you come by, you spray the ground with a quart of Roundup. You plant your beans then after you plant the beans, they come up and the weeds come up again, and you have to go out and do that all over again with another quart of Roundup. And then, because Roundup doesn't kill the weeds anymore like it used to, you have to put a residual chemical in there, which costs you more money. Well, you know, you wind up with maybe 75 ounces of chemical on the ground, and I do a little bit of organic, but where I do use chemicals, I spray it myself, and I use around 12 ounces of chemical. And I get a very good yield. Last year, for instance, our soybeans made 62 bushel to the acre on a very similar soil, planted the same time and just across the roadway, about half as far as from me to you. Those soybeans were GMO, and they made about 35 bushel, and it was because of the Roundup causes susceptibility to diseases that causes sudden death syndrome, which really hurts, and the farmers really don't understand what's happening in all of that process. You know, farmers, they really don't understand, because they plant so many GMO crops. What it does, you know, it's affecting trade. In 1995, the U.S. owned 72% of the export trade on soybeans, and now we have 58% because of GMO. And in a case of corn, in 95-96, that export to the EU countries was 109 million bushel. Yes. And then in 99-2000, that number fell to 2.7 million. You know, nearly eliminated that. I just want to say a couple of words about what we're doing about some of these things. And one of the things is the farmer-to-farmer campaign to educate these farmers. We do travel and we do media work. Lots of TV, the print, the radio, and different, going around the world and telling the story of what really is happening to family farmers in the U.S. And, you know, we're part of Via Campesina, where that, and, we're doing networking with environmental organizations like Greenpeace, the Defenders of Wildlife, the Sierra Club, and others. We are part of the international antitrust suit against Monsanto and all co-conspirators. We have a Starlink suit in the works that's moving along at the present time. We have been fighting globalization around the world for some time. This is part of the whole big problem. And, you know, we're building, trying to build bridges to labor and minority organizations, the religious groups in this country. So there's a lot going on, but, you know, I mean, we have a few bucks, and they've got plenty of millions, and so it's a huge problem. But let me tell you, the vast majority of the people around the world do not condone GMOs. And I would implore you to be those people, and I think you are. You probably wouldn't be here today. Thank you very much.
That was Bill Christensen, soybean and corn grower from Missouri and president of the National Family Farm Coalition. He and John Kinsman spoke at a session on family farms and genetic engineering in San Diego in the summer of 2001. This is the first in-depth report from that event. The meeting was held to call attention to the unopposed claims made by the large trade conference of the biotech industry that was held at the same time. However, apart from a couple of articles in the local paper that treated the event with disdain, no notice was taken by the media. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on family farms and genetic engineering on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full one-hour program, Family Farms and Genetic Engineering. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Mariah Gillardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.